Okay, here we are. Can you believe it? Oh my gosh, it's been so long, and I don't know how many times I have said this. I am sorry. I am sorry it has taken so long to get another episode out. This podcast is it is hobbling along, and we are keeping it alive. And I am still adjusting to the new job. So I'm working full time for the Babylon Bee now, which is just a thrill and a dream come true. Loving life, but it's also taken up a lot of the time that I used to spend prepping for and editing down this podcast. And so I just kind of need to find a new rhythm. I have my brothers helping me now, and my brother Sam actually edited down this podcast episode, and it's been a couple weeks since we recorded it, so I can't even remember what we talked about. So I'm actually texting him right now to see what it was we did talk about. So I can kind of give you a little preview here, but I just want to say, you know, I am sorry it's taken so long. We do have every intention of kind of getting back into a rhythm with these episodes, and I know we say that every time, and then we drop off for a few weeks, so bear with us. We are not abandoning this, and we're going to keep going. We're going to keep improving the content. And we're going to try to work on the consistency here. So thank you for your patience. I know a couple of you have written me and asked what's going on. That's pretty much it. There's nothing really more complicated than that, other than I am a lot busier now. And a lot of my free time belongs to the bee. They keep me alive to serve the bee. So I'm glad you're tuning in. I'm glad you're listening. This week we talked about a little bit about Trump's COVID recovery and some of the media reaction, which was hilarious. And then the main subject or topic that we went into this time was about masculinity versus femininity, and how much of that is innate, how much of that is culturally affected, how much of it comes from our beliefs, our values, our theology. And so I thought it was a good discussion. I hope you enjoy it as well. And let's jump into it. Just wanted to give you a little background of what's going on. Thanks for your patience. And we will try to be back in a good rhythm with these soon. All right. Bye.
Hey guys, look at what that. Is this? Five minutes before the hour.
Whoa. All three of us. No text from Sam saying, I didn't get the link. What?
Nothing. Yeah, you guys are.
We're all here.
Come on.
We're all. We got our drinks.
Joel Sam, drugged his kids.
Cheers. Clink the camera.
Hold on. Let me get my glass of water.
What are you drinking today?
Yes.
I got some Sam Adams.
I got me the Great Lakes Oktoberfest.
Nice.
I like
just the fall weather.
Huh? I like the Sam Adams Oktoberfest. It tastes like crunchy leaves.
This is going to be the Barry Brothers ASMR episode.
Ew, that's nasty. That's gross. this is for those of you, mustache against pop filter.
For those of you listening, that was me rubbing my mustache against
the... It's like the opposite of ASMR. That's like...
whatever the opposite of soothing and pleasing is... That's what
you
that
found
was.
A lot of uses for that mustache.
How's it going, guys?
It's great.
We're back. This podcast is hobbling along. It's been shot in the kneecaps, and its arm has been severed, but it's just dragging itself along.
Just a flesh wound.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, just so our audience knows, like for the past 3 weeks, Joel's been like, guys, can you help with this podcast? I don't have time to like edit and all this stuff. Would you be willing? And Aaron and I are both like, yeah. And then like a week passes of just silence.
And then it's like, I forgot to send you the files to edit that you so kindly offered to do.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's been a few people, and I'm actually surprised, like a few people who have messaged me and said things like, you know, hey, when are you guys going to record another one? I really miss the podcast. I'm going through withdrawals. Your podcast is great. And I'm like, shoot, man, I guess we got to keep doing it.
I mean, are you really surprised, though? I mean,
yes, give the people what they want. There's been a lot of adjusting going on the last 3 weeks. So I'm full time at the B now. I'm the managing editor, whatever that means. But that just means I work full time. I do a lot of stuff for the site, including writing and editing content, creating premium content for the subscribers, prepping for podcasts and interviews and stuff like that. So I've been very busy. And I've had to adjust from what I used to be doing, which was like full time on my site and a lot of extra time to dedicate to the podcast, to suddenly having a full time job for the bee. So now I have to work this in a way where we can still provide a quality product here. Yeah. For the lovely audience, although I don't know if that's going to happen if Sam keeps getting up and walking away. Sam, where'd you go?
We're just going to have to. We're just have to move forward with this as you know, a part of the podcast. We had to be prepared for random desertions by Sam. He's just going to leave. Never know when he'll return.
He's going to get some more.
Just keep our lamps trimmed and our oil lamps ready. We know
Emily's,
not when Sam will return.
Emily's whoa.
Oops, where did Sam go now?
Okay. Did you get a fresh plate of squid to snack on?
Yeah,
in front
fresh
of the microphone?
Squid. Mm. No, Emily's chair yum, yum. Is like 18,000 times nicer than mine. We got ours for free. Or mine is free, and hers is from her office. So it's like a Herman Miller, and it's Yeah. So whenever
Herman Miller's good, you know, they are out of Grand Rapids and the company I worked for managed their supply chain. It's very exciting stuff.
Did you get a free chair?
I died a little bit inside just talking about that for 2 seconds.
Your past life, Joel. Look where you are now.
Seems like so long ago.
Back before I started a podcast out of my basement, I was in supply chain management.
Hey, I mean, speaking of which, it's been a year ago today or yesterday. When you started, sat down to start a podcast and website,
that's right, guys.
And all that stuff, right?
So a year ago, my life was upended, came home, started this Reconcile Media, started a podcast with you bros, did this website thing, and I cannot believe that was a year ago. That is crazy.
Now you're peddling fake news across the globe.
Now we are peddling fake news and misinformation to deceive the public and
lucrative fake news business.
sway the election,
chomp down those clicks
for Trump and Putin.
That's right.
And to you, bros,
to
raise
you.
A glass. Aaron's got his water. Sam and I have our Oktoberfest, and it's been a good year. And I love you guys, and I'm thankful for you guys.
Just remember us, Joel, when you. Go out right off into the sunset of fame and fortune.
I will. When I give my big speech, my first TED talk about fake news, I'll talk about my brothers. Yeah. You imagine a TED, like, what if I gave a TED? Like, they would never.
That'd be so funny.
They would never. I am a pariah to folks like that.
Aim for, you just need to aim to. To be the speaker of like a graduation ceremony at some well, conservative school or something like that.
Did you hear what happened to our owner, Seth Dillon?
Seth Dillon, he was going to be like speak in chapel or something.
His own alma mater, which is a Christian school in Florida. Mm. They were going to invite him to speak in chapel. And he's a great guy. He's a Christian guy. I'm sure he contributes to the school and is very involved with his school there, that he still lives close to that school. And some Twitter mob decided to get him canceled. And they pulled up one of his old tweets where he retweeted that video of the Black Lives Matter crowd, like surrounding the diners, like forcing them to raise their fists, you know? Mm-hmm. And he said, he retweeted with a caption, "Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization." And so that was the tweet that got him canceled. Wow.
So which is worse, guys? Is the Twitter mob worse or the people that bow the knee to the Twitter mob?
The people that bow the knee. Because the Twitter mob, they are, it's almost like, I don't blame them because they're down here.
Because they are beneath me.
Like, the same reason I don't blame a dog for chewing on the arm of a chair.
Ooh, that's right up there with locusts. Twitter users are dogs. And what was it last week? Californians locusts. Are locusts, yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
No. But all I'm saying is that the folks who engage in that kind of behavior online, trying to ruin someone's life, are like, they are awful people, and I don't really expect much better behavior from them. But people who should know better and people who should show some backbone in the face of something like that, I am far more frustrated and disappointed by those people than I am by the crazies online.
And like, the percentage of Americans who actually are on Twitter and are part of the Twitter mob, it's a lot smaller than you think.
It's a couple hundred
people.
Seldom
are they the reasonable, rational ones who are forming the mob on Twitter.
I hope that people are wising up to it. It's like, it's scary when you're in it. You know, like, I've been mobbed on Twitter before, and it's scary. But then you kind of step back and you realize, like, this is like 120 people. You know, there are over 300 million people in the country. Like, no one knows who these people are. No one knows who I am. And it's just scary when you're in it. And I think people panic. And I think public relations programs and colleges are probably having to adjust to this new phenomenon and come up with standards and best practices for how to handle Twitter mobs and cancel mobs. And they're just a little bit behind the curve. So I think that at some point they'll probably catch up to it and realize that you just ignore it and it goes away, you know. But I don't know. But we don't have to talk about all that.
Nah.
Go to Parler. which I did. So I went over there. I'm like, I'll check it out. It's just a bunch of MAGA people just MAGA at each other. That's all it is.
MAGA at each other.
MAGA.
Yeah, MAGA. You too? Oh, yeah. MAGA. Yeah,
you
too,
can't stop me from saying it here.
I'm on Parler. I think I have one post on Parler.
Yeah, I technically am too, and I have one or two. And
I created my account and I posted. I'm like, the sweet smell of freedom, and then I'd never post it again.
Turns out the sweet smell of freedom was kind of boring.
The app is kind of wonky, and I don't like getting used to a new app.
They're trying to be Twitter, but they try to be different enough to where it's not exactly Twitter, and it makes it
Twitter
confusing,
but with a red color scheme.
Exactly.
Ooh. Ooh.
Right.
Yeah.
So like red versus blue. Like all the Republicans go over to Twitter and all the Democrats can stay on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
You know, I've probably brought this up before, but every time it comes up, the colors red and blue come up, it bugs me to no end. It drives me nuts. Because red is the color of the left. It always has been, traditionally speaking. I mean,
like communists.
Communist
China, communist Russia,
absolutely. The French revolutionaries, you know, Les Miserables, all them. It's red has always been the color of the left, globally over the last.
See, this is the
centuries.
Battle we should be fighting.
Yeah,
right
we
now.
Should be trying to switch colors.
Where's the outrage, guys? Come on.
Yeah. The good guys are blue.
Who picked the colors? Like when did it become a thing?
It became a thing during one newscast, I think during Bush versus Gore, I think one of the elections in the 90s, or like either
also
Bush versus Gore or Clinton. Yeah. And one of the cable news channels did a giant infographic of kind of a very innovative infographic where they portrayed the Republican controlled areas as red and with like red lights, and the Democrat controlled areas with blue lights, and it just stuck, and it's been that way ever since. And I did a lot of research in it because I was always curious about it. But it was just, it came from one newscast where this newscaster decided that's what it was, and that's been the standard ever since. There's no meaningful history to it. There's no,
so the media,
we didn't
made
choose
it
those.
Up.
The media chose our colors for us. And blue, I mean, you research colors. Red creates agitation when you look at it. It makes you uneasy. Blue is a much more calming color. I think it was,
it's also,
I think it was calculated.
Color.
It's
weaker.
I mean, the red, the Nazis, you know, you got the fascists, yeah. the leftists, I mean, totalitarians. Red
so
has always been a theme.
Let's
it's
run
all
a
making
ticket
sense now,
to
guys.
Change the Republican color to green.
To green.
Green.
All of the vitriol and anger and hatred, it all makes sense now.
Yeah.
It's because we're red. That's why people red. Hate us.
I think our color should be orange. That would only make sense.
The it's
conservatives
becoming more
really
orange
aren't
and orange
the conservatives
by the
anymore. We're the Trump Party now. We're not the conservatives. We're
Trumpists.
Yeah, Republican Party. Both the Republican and the Democratic Party are pretty much dead at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Speaking of
colors, did you write the Donald the Orange comes back as Donald the White?
Yeah. Well. Okay. So yeah,
I
we
didn't see that one.
That was a joke that we wrote. Several months ago for Jordan Peterson. We wrote it for Jordan Peterson because he went away and he was really sick. And then there was word that he was getting better and he was coming back to the States. And so we had this article ready for Jordan Peterson's return. It was going to be Jordan Peterson comes back as Jordan the White or Peterson the White. And that would have been perfect. I still wish we could have used it for Jordan Peterson because I love Jordan Peterson. But he's still Jordan Peterson is still recovering. It's still kind of it's a really sad situation. So one of our writers yesterday was like, "Hey, you know that Jordan Peterson the White, we should use that for Trump."
Wonderful.
Donald the Orange.
comes back Donald as Donald the White. Yes, that's what they used to call me. I'm Donald the White.
I mean, in the hospital, he was kind of Donald the White. He didn't have his orange tan.
It's true. Yeah,
but it's better without his orange
when
tan.
When he did come back, he came back this evening, and his skin was oranger than ever.
Like, oh, yeah.
Man, he layered it on thick.
I love the way he came back. He just, I mean, you know.
It was so much
I've
fanfare,
never, I haven't
dude.
Felt better. This is the best that I've felt in 20 years. You know, he takes his mask off. Coronavirus is like, this. No, I beat it easy, you know, 2 days.
I beat it just like I'm beating China, just like I beat ISIS, just like I'm going to beat the Democrats and everything.
The most beautiful thing was to watch the media reaction when he was on the White House balcony and he took off his mask. Right. And CNN's watching it and they're like, oh no, here it comes. Here it comes. Oh no. And he takes off his mask and they're like, oh, there it goes. That's the wrong message, folks. That's the wrong message.
It's like, he's the only one standing there, guys.
They're just all freaking out and just wringing their hands, clutching their pearls. It's just so great, you know.
You almost expect Trump to just like side glance at the camera after he takes it off with like a little smirk on his face, knowing exactly what he's doing.
Oh, man. So, what's new with you guys? How are things going?
2 months till the baby.
Oh my gosh.
Almost baby time.
2 months.
2 months.
Two
yeah, Emily's months. Really popping, man.
She is. She's doing great.
How's she feeling?
She's doing great.
Good.
She's doing awesome. Yeah. Really good. Everything's perfect. Baby's healthy. No concerns or complications or anything whatsoever. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, smooth sailing so far.
What about you? What about you, Aaron?
Nothing new. Nothing new over here. Yep.
Did you finish that backsplash?
Oh yes, I in fact have.
Well done, mighty husbandman.
I chopped down some trees the other day.
Oh,
Ooh, what do you know?
Well, actually, it's more accurate. My friend came over with his chainsaw, and he cut them down, and I watched.
That's the way to do it. That's,
yeah.
That's even more manlier than cutting it down yourself, is ordering somebody else to do it.
That's right. But no, we're all doing good. Kids are doing well. Kids are a blast, having fun with them.
Yeah, man.
Good. And we're just bracing for the brutal reality of Michigan winter. It's good. Coming. Summer was like lame, man. Like,
it was a mild summer.
Well, this is, we were all on lockdown, you know? There's nothing
travel.
Happening. Everything was closed.
Nothing. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Did you hear about Michigan, the Supreme Court, going against Whitmer's executive order power?
What does that mean? Is she actually?
It basically means, it doesn't mean that everything's lifted and everything goes back to normal. It just means that she has to work with the legislative branch to determine what the protocol and lockdown procedures are going to be.
Oh, so you have to work with your legislature.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
You can't do it all by yourself
you
and ignore them.
You can't be a dictator?
Have to,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So.
Steven Crowder was there at the Capitol the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he did a rally.
Your Capitol did a little mask-free rally. It was how many more seniors or something. It was like her policy of, she's been stuffing COVID patients in the nursing homes, killing all the old people. Yep. Like a freaking moron.
Only what morons do.
Locusts, dogs, and morons.
You're so getting canceled, Joel. I'm just here to watch it.
Okay, guys. So what are we really talking about today?
I have a spin the wheel.
Ooh, a spin the wheel.
Topics that I can spin.
Ooh, did you actually make a wheel?
Show us the wheel. Did you populate this wheel yourself? Did you come up with all the topics?
I did. All right, I came up with the topics.
Jeez. Should we come up with like a chant, a jingle? Like,
okay, so can you read off the topics for us so that we know what?
Or I can just make a surprise when I spin it.
Yeah, just spin it.
Well, okay,
I don't know if they're any good though. You know what I mean? But I mean, we'll see. That's a political one. I'll change it.
We can do politics. I don't care. You know, I'm always down for that.
Joel hates politics.
They're all boring. I don't like the ones I chose. I did.
You know, if you're just going to keep spinning the wheel, why don't you just pick one off the wheel?
Just go ahead and pick the one you wanted to talk about.
But I want it to appear random. I put these together in 3 seconds, okay? So these guys didn't respond to the text.
Let's talk about emotions and mental health.
Okay, which state will secede first?
Oh.
Boom.
Okay, so are we doing a little lightning round to where, like...
I don't know. Sure. I mean,
we're assuming that a state will secede. Is this in line with our typical Civil War digression that usually happens?
I think so.
We talk about this a lot, don't we? Yeah,
our Civil War digression.
How somehow our republic will dissolve in some shape or form. Yeah.
Well, I don't think the first to secede will be a red state. I think it'll be California.
Ooh, plot twist.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Which I think everyone would be like, peace.
Bye.
See ya.
Yeah.
Go for bye. That meme from you guys have you guys seen Tombstone, by the way?
Like Tombstone. The new, like not the old show, like the new one?
The old, like Val Kilmer.
Oh yeah.
Kurt Russell, not Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell. Who are the other ones? I can't remember. There's some big names in it. Yeah, Tombstone. You haven't seen that?
Is it a movie or a show?
It's a movie. It's a Western. It's a Western movie from the 90s. It's like one of the most watchable and rewatchable Westerns ever.
Wasn't it based on... Sam's gone again, by the way. wasn't it based off a really old black and white Western show, Tombstone?
Well, it's based off the gunfight at OK Corral.
Okay.
And Wyatt Earp is the main character.
Oh, I'm thinking Gunsmoke. I was thinking...
No, Tombstone. Sam, have you seen Tombstone? Oh my gosh. We the three of us need to watch Tombstone sometime. It's like a great... It's a man movie.
So when we all meet up together
in the
Midwest...
scenes.
Yes. And we rent a cabin up north Michigan on a lake.
We're
going to
watch an old Western.
We're going to watch an old Western. Well, we're going to go. We're going to kill an elk. We're going to eat it.
Dude, we would be so... Does anyone actually know how to do that? Any one of us know how to kill an elk?
YouTube.
And gut
YouTube
it and
has,
eat it?
YouTube it would be, has a it tutorial, would be like probably. Straight savage. The elk would be
pieces.
We just tear it
there
would be fur and blood everywhere.
Just rip it off.
We would be like arguing like, no, Joel, you're supposed to make this incision over here first.
We'd be like, we all be out there with our smartphones looking at the YouTube video. Okay, no, wait, no. Okay, no, we got to shoot it again. It's still moving. Joel, shoot it. Shoot it again.
What did I tell you about the time where I had to do that with a catfish? Where Hannah got me to do that with a catfish?
You had to shoot a catfish?
No, not shoot a catfish. When we were still dating, we went fishing, and we caught a catfish, and Hannah's like, ooh, we should totally like cook it and eat it. And I'm like, oh, stink. I've never done that before.
Catfish is hard to clean.
But I don't want to look like a idiot. No, Joel, you were part of this. You helped with this.
Oh, that was at our, at mom and dad's house. We had all those catfish.
Yeah, so I had to look up on YouTube how to kill a catfish. I could have just been creative and figured that out myself.
Didn't you smash it with a hammer or something?
Yeah, you had to take a mallet and smack it in the head, poor guy.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
I think you had to actually come and I think I tried and I didn't do it hard enough or something. I had too much mercy in me.
Yeah, you have too much of a soft heart.
Yeah.
So I also have a soft heart, but I can turn it off on a whim.
So. So we'll let you kill the elk.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And then we'll get the YouTube tutorial and we'll wear the skins back. You know.
Okay.
And then
we'll watch Tombstone, where the meme comes from, where he says "bye," which is what we're gonna say when California secedes.
That's how we got on this whole.
Okay.
Thing.
Just trying to.
You know that meme, right? Where
he's
like,
bit.
Bye. You know that one?
Well,
yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, that's from Tombstone. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we.
So, California's going to secede. We're going to kill an elk in northern Michigan. We're going to watch Tombstone.
Next topic.
Oh, great. That was good, guys.
Quality content. This is what our listeners are waiting for.
Yeah, the depth of wisdom
the
and insight long that we have to offer.
Yeah,
remember they've been
the
waiting for a
goals.
Month, and this is the garbage we give them.
Remember the lofty goals we had of like
so sorry,
structure
everybody.
And planning and content, and like
we
we're
tried,
really
we were
like,
trying so hard. Listen, we're just getting warmed up.
Yep,
we're pacing
just you
ourselves,
wait, guys.
We're,
just
you
wait.
All right,
the good stuff is
I've,
coming.
I've got another one. Okay. This is all right. I'm going to regret bringing this topic up, but
you still will.
I will anyways. Masculinity versus femininity. What makes something masculine? What makes it? What makes something feminine? And then also, are there feminine qualities that are admirable in a man and vice versa?
Ooh.
How much of it is influenced by culture and how much of it is innate in our nature?
Either.
Right?
Yeah.
Interesting. I love this topic, and I think about it often.
Hmm.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
And Joel does have a manly mustache, so
yeah,
he does
have
some cred. I think he can speak to this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always had a problem with the, I guess, the traditional, or the pressures of traditional views of what is masculine and feminine on a man or a woman, in the sense that you know, it bugs me that for example, you know, the only people you have the only kind of men you have becoming interior designers and clothing designers are gay guys, you know, or you know, effeminate men or women. And I think part of that's due to choice, but I think a lot of it's also due to the fact that, men just know that you're not supposed to do that. You know, I don't know. It's just like not a field that men go into. I don't know. You know, nursing is another one. You know, so I. I wish that there was that our culture had a firmer grasp on what true masculinity is. Because we lose the true definition of masculinity. We replace it with all these trappings and you know, colors and aesthetics and hobbies and things that are supposed to be manly, things that are supposed to be feminine. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. So what you would be saying is, and let me know if this isn't the route you want to take with this, but like, do we equate masculinity, femininity with identity too much? Whereas if a man displays feminine traits, our go-to as a culture is, he must be gay. Maybe you have to like other men.
Yeah.
And in reality,
the idea behind transgender, like the transgender culture, LGBTQ culture, is it's reinforcing the gender stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pushing people into a box where if you like pink, or if you have a soft voice, well, you have no place as that's not masculine. That's feminine. Yeah. You have to go this feminine route.
Or a tomboy, you know, a girl who's right. A tomboy.
Exactly.
And our culture is pushing them to actually change their identity.
Yeah.
Right. Change their sexual identity based on their preferences.
It's horrible.
And so in a way, if you're a boy and you like pink and you like soft things and you like art and you like being a hairstylist or something like that, that means, you know, you're either, you know, gay or you have, you know, deep down you're a woman. So what's so interesting about that and so counterproductive is that, you know, in an effort to get away from stereotypes of sex, we have reinforced stereotypes of femininity and masculinity.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I think our culture wouldn't necessarily say, you know, liking those things makes you this, but they've at least opened the door to it as a possibility.
Right. Yeah.
They've and in that way, they've reinforced it.
Well, and I think that we also have lost the idea of, you know, the well-rounded man, you know, the warrior poet,
Renaissance
the man, this, you know, David, the psalmist, the man who can write the most heartbreaking and beautiful poetry and then go kill 100 Philistines and chop off their foreskins, you know.
200, actually.
Yeah. Was it 200?
It was
okay, yeah, my bad.
He was asked for 100, and he went above and beyond.
Who does that? Who says, all right, I'll go chop off 100 dicks for you, but you know what? You know, I'm going to be double sure.
100 foreskins are not enough. I'm feeling 100 more.
He was get an extra 100.
He was fulfilling the biblical mandate of going the extra mile.
I'm kind of like...
Go the extra foreskin.
I think that story does not play out how we think it did. I think David set up a little tent, had a bunch of money, and, you know, paid a bunch of Philistines to come and get the surgery. We think he went out there and, like, murdered 200 people, right? But I think he, like, you know, saved...
He, like, went into all the cities at the bars and, like, you know, okay, hey, I'll give you $100. Cut it off.
I'll pick up your tab tonight.
Do it. Do it.
Drinks told on everyone, me, everybody.
Like,
oh.
Like the next like ED treatment is like David's tent that he sets up.
Oh my gosh. Okay, how did we get on this again? Oh yeah, masculinity. The idea of that was a very intentional part of why I joined the Marine Corps, because I've always been I don't have like this killer instinct. I've always been kind of a softer person, more into poetry and music and art related pursuits. And I felt, you know, when I was 18, 19 years old, I really felt the need to develop that other side of myself. That's not natural. It doesn't come natural to me, but I just felt like I needed to develop it and give myself the ability to turn it on when needed, you know? And vice versa. I think, you know, if you're naturally the killer, the Marine, it's important for you to be able to develop the softer or quote unquote more feminine aspects of your nature, you know? And but we, yeah, our culture's really kind of perverted that whole idea, and tricked there a lot of people into changing their identity.
There was a lot of, you know, the big thing recently was the whole issue of toxic masculinity, right? And there was some reaction to that, and you're trying to destroy masculinity in general. But I mean, what's true? What would be an accurate description of toxic masculinity? If there's toxic masculinity out there, how would we label or describe that?
I would say, go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, your typical Hollywood macho, muscular, womanizer, alcohol addict dude, you know.
Like James Bond?
James Bond. I mean, like, yeah, of course.
James Bond's like, awesome, though.
He is awesome. He's freaking awesome, but you know, what qualities of a man are important, you know, and you know, faithfulness and starting a family and serving other people, like, that is, those are the qualities of a man that are to be valued. But yeah, I think that, I mean, like, you know, it's so interesting to see the system of materialism and consumerism in this country flip so easily from, like, idolizing, you know, men that are that, and like pushing this whole identity of like super macho muscular men that are going out and sleeping with as many women as they want, and then like flipping on that and being like, that's evil and toxic.
Yeah, because that was driven primarily by Hollywood, right?
Right.
I mean, it's setting forth this picture of what a man is, and they push that and push that and push that, and it just seemed like they reached a point where they're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, no, this is horrible. And then you know, instead of placing the blame on themselves for creating that, or not creating it, but at least promoting it.
I'm blaming.
My problem, you know what I mean, has been with the terminology itself, the idea of toxic masculinity. Those two words do not belong together. Because in my opinion, if you are masculine, that cannot be toxic. I think that the failure to live up to your masculinity manifests in two ways, and that just depends on your personality. It's either going to manifest in weakness and moral cowardice, or it's going to manifest in, you know, machismo, womanizing, abuse, running over people.
Yep.
And neither of those things are masculinity. Mm-hmm. You know, masculinity involves character, integrity, virtue, strength, it's impossible for that to be toxic. So I think just the pairing of those two words together has always really bothered me. Because it's again, that the classic thing that the left always does is just redefining and reclaiming words for a political purpose.
Right.
And in that
way, they've taken even the term masculinity and made it into something that's a little bit sour.
Yeah.
Instead of just being like, you're a toxic man, you know, you're just a bad dude. Or, you know, coupling that with like, you know, actually, you know, liking and lifting up true masculinity. Instead, it's just tear down. And I think that's when you see some sort of movement in the culture that is 100% circled and based upon tearing something down. I think it's a cultural misstep and it's a philosophical misstep. You know, you look at any recent movement, it's tear this down, tear that down, tear this down, tear down these toxic men, tear down this, tear down that. And it's, and it's the only thing they have. If you have no moral standard whatsoever, if you have nothing to measure this by, if you have nothing to lift up in its stead, the only thing you can do is tear down because they have no ground to actually say, hey, this is good. We lift this up. Because this is good, and this is what we want to see. They don't have that at all. And all
you don't have anything to offer. You're simply destroying the monsters you've created, and not coupling that with. But this is what we should be, right? There's no paradigm. There's no answer.
That's the endless cycle of a godless humanity. Is you build a monster and then you tear it down, so you can build another monster, which you then tear down, so you can build another monster, which you then tear down. It's just it's never ending. It goes back to the beginning.
So what's, you know, what's masculinity from like God's perspective? Are there traits that are distinctly masculine? In other words, things that we are called to or born with that are unique to males or should be?
I think there's so much more room and flexibility in what Scripture defines as what he calls us to as men than we have allowed ourselves to be in our culture. And everyone is, you know, everyone is in part defined by their culture. We're raised with values. We have role models that we grow up with, right? But I think there's, there's so much flexibility in that. And it has changed throughout the centuries, right?
Yeah.
But there, I think there are some things that have remained the same.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, virtue and everything that flows from virtue.
Right.
Yeah, I think there is a unique role for men when it comes to integrity and standing up against evil and protecting the weak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that is something that is uniquely that we're uniquely equipped for, but also is part of a mandate or a role that is, yeah, has been assigned to us as men.
Yeah, that, I think that's the big thing in Scripture. It's not necessarily not totally like this innate thing, but it's more of the roles that we've been given.
Yes.
And I think the roles we've been given are often coincide with how God has created us in general, right? So, you know, we're,
and how we live up to those roles will look different depending on how God has equipped us as well. You know, we're,
yeah, right,
not all of us are called to, you know, fight on the front lines, and not all of us are called to, you know, change culture with flourishing rhetoric, you know, or
right,
speeches. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all gifted in a different way, but I think there's the commonality between all that is this kernel of standing up for what's right, mm-hmm, standing up for righteousness against evil.
And isn't it fascinating how the most common struggles with men are tied directly to our greatest roles? How, you know, men, you know, we're, whether it's leadership as a husband or a father or whatever, or standing up against evil, you know, that takes courage, that takes conviction, yeah, integrity, yeah, and the biggest problem that men have generally is passivity, you know, just kind of not caring, not conquering. And so you see like...
Not conquering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. But you're right, that Sam. Includes... I think like the biblical understanding of manhood is a lot more well-rounded than what our culture has described in the past. And right, even just, you know, if you take like the whole idea of like men not crying as much, right? Like all of the biggest, you know, characters in the Bible were major criers, man. I mean, Jesus cried all the time.
It all depends on what you cry about, though, okay?
Right.
We're not talking about Brian Stelter crying here.
Brian Stelter. We're not talking about taking your teddy bear and your dolls to bed and crying yourself to sleep.
It's, well, no, it's often tears driven by love,
yeah,
and
yeah,
caring,
yeah,
right? Not out of fear. Your overwhelming love for and sacrifice for others that drives you to even tears, right?
And a deeper like connection to your emotional center.
Yeah,
as a man,
right?
You know, like understanding, you know, and actively contemplating your life and your loved ones and your surroundings and your own thoughts, mm-hmm, I think is what made, for instance, you know, David in Scripture so unique. You see such an interesting transformation in David's life from his younger years, when he first became, you know, from when he's a shepherd boy to being a warrior to first becoming king. And then in his later years, it's like, how is this even the same person? You know, someone that's allowing rape and incest in his family, who murders and rapes for lust and marries multiple wives. It's like, how on earth is this the same person? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you see somebody who was, you know, fully in touch with the spirit of God and God's word and himself, and somehow losing that and losing sight of that and chasing after the trappings of life. I don't know, man, just a thought.
I think of a good paradigm for, I think, what men should be. 1 Corinthians 16:13 says, "Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. Let all that you do be done in love." And I think that's a good starting point right there. Like, what should a man be? Someone who's watchful, who's alert and ready, mm-hmm. Who's firm in the faith, knows what he believes, has conviction, is strong, not necessarily just physically strong, but emotionally strong. And then let all that you do be done in love. The most masculine man is the most loving one. Right, the most caring, compassionate one. It's a good verse for that.
So what distinguishes that from femininity or a woman's role?
And is there such thing as toxic femininity?
Absolutely no. because a lot of those things, like, you know, we talked about virtue, character.
Right.
Love, letting everything you do be done in love. Of course, those are common to, you know, the feminine role as well. So what's different there?
I think you look at both. So you look at men and women, and you're talking about the spiritual aspects of masculinity and femininity. I think the full extent to which both of those things are realized are when they sacrifice themselves. A man, you know, in his pursuit of God and his pursuit of his relationship with his family, will actively lay himself down, will actively love and serve those around him. And I think for femininity, it's the flip side of the same coin. It just looks different. And a lot of that, I mean, sometimes it's just simple biological differences in hormones, and you have to take that stuff into account, right? And nothing is, you know, nothing is separate right now in this life from its physical form and from our own physical tendencies and our own genetics. But yeah, I think it's just like the flip side of the same coin, and they just look different, and there's no greater and there's no lesser. They're serving and laying themselves down for others in different ways.
I think the distinction is probably most clearly seen in a marriage relationship, how God set it up at the beginning. And this is really old fashioned, right? But that God made man to lead, and God made the woman to help. Both equal in the sight of God. The Holy Spirit is called the helper, right? So calling a woman the helper is not demeaning in any way.
Yeah, that drives me up a wall. That just the attitude our culture has of service or helping being as a subservient or lesser role or less worthy or less admirable. Mm-hmm. Just the degradation and downplaying of what women do and how God has gifted women and shames women into, you know, they've set up masculinity as the highest virtue for women. You know, if you're not being a man, then
doing all the things that man do.
How interesting is that?
Exactly. And it's really a twisted form of almost misogyny. You're setting up masculinity as the standard for women, that if you aren't leading and hard charging and bossing people around and taking charge, then you're not a full woman, you know, or you're something lesser. If you're serving, or helping, then that's, you know, look at the way they treat, you know, someone like Amy Coney Barrett, who, you know, has seven kids and, you know.
And an amazing career.
And an amazing career, you know? Yeah.
Literally getting nominated to the highest court in the land. And
it just goes to show that a yeah. biblical understanding of the differences between men and women do not necessarily mean that, right. you know, that you are lesser and you're kept down and you're not able yeah. to use your gifts to succeed in life, right?
And I think there's obviously some cultural misunderstandings, like, you know, how a lot of us grew up. Femininity was subservience and enablement of men to do and be whoever they want. Mm-hmm. And you stay out of the way and you're basically like a pet. And
which
servant.
Is how it is in almost like every other culture in the world.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Where women are property. Women are.
Right.
And it was like that through all of time until yeah. Christianity came.
Right.
I mean, Christianity yeah. was right. the idea that elevated women to this level of honor.
Right.
And
it really did. For Paul to say, husbands, love your wives
yes.
as Christ loved
and
the church.
Lay yourself down for them. Lay your life down for them.
I don't think we understand how culturally breaking that was. Mm-hmm. Men didn't love their wives. Men grabbed wives for making babies so that hopefully they would bear a son so that they would have an heir. That was like what was going on in ancient times.
And to give right? yourself for them and to love right. them as your own body.
Right. right.
Is actually interesting. The passage of scripture where it talks about like husbands and wives and daughters and, you know, and children and all that stuff, those are called household codes. It's kind of what they're called. And the household codes are really common in cultures, in civilizations and right. stuff. But the typical household code almost always was limited to how one class is meant to treat the higher class. So it was only like wives, do this for your husbands. Children, do this for your parents. It was almost never, you know, the leader telling the husband how you're supposed to treat your wife. It was always from the wife up to the husband and what she had to do without laying responsibility on the husband. And that earth-shattering, countercultural idea of sacrificing and nourishing and cherishing and giving yourself for your wife was completely revolutionary. Yeah, I think there's so much beauty, I think, in men and women embracing what makes them different.
Right. They're given identity.
Exactly.
You know, like they're just their physical identity and
right.
being okay with their preferences and their desires. And some women aren't going to have those desires to do this or to do that, you know, would be considered more traditional home setup. You know, there's room in there. To have a biblical Absolutely. Marriage. I don't think, you know, that it doesn't cut that stuff out. It's, you know, there's a reason that scripture doesn't lay out, like what you're saying, Aaron, doesn't lay out these household rules. Like, mm-hmm. it talks about how you ought to respect and love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Respect and love each other. Lay yourself down for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And glorify Christ, because that's what you're here for. And right. all of you, you know, all of you do that together. You all glorify Christ. You all serve him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've equipped you all with different strengths. I've equipped you all with different abilities and different inclinations, and use those and glorify me. And it's liberating and it's awesome and it's freeing. And, you know, we live in a culture that has stripped away humanity and beauty and left this bare bones, just struggle, like this anxious struggle against our own identity. Yeah,
I think it's interesting how, you know, you can bash down and tear down masculinity all you want, and the culture can really destroy it and all that stuff. And I think really make men hesitant to be men in general, to make them more passive. But when push comes to shove, you know, like even with all this cultural pressure, you know, you go up to any, you know, at least most, not all. But most women, you know, maybe like who's like looking for a boyfriend or someone, you know, what do you want to see in a boyfriend? What do you want to see in a man? Right? It almost always goes back to those innate God-given roles of I want him to be
like a leader. I want him to be confident. I want him to serve me. I want him to cherish me and love me, right? It's usually not, I want him to be passive and lay on the couch all day so that I can do what I want. It usually goes back to this innate understanding of this is how men are supposed to be. And I want someone like that, you know? And that's something that culture can't completely wipe away, even with all the pressure.
Well, that's tough. The root of most of the ills of our culture is men not being who they're supposed to be.
It's true.
You look at abortion, you look at what happens in politics, what's going on in our inner cities, what's going on in the criminal justice system. It's a lot of it goes back to the failure of men.
Mm-hmm. You know. Oh, I mean, and I feel that personally. I mean, you know, I could give you a long list of the ways that I am way too passive, way too unassertive, in different ways in my life, right? And just how that is, that's the way, I think Satan knows that's the way that he can make a lot of ground, is to make men more passive, because that just opens the door for a lot of other problems.
Yeah, man. Yeah, the whole Me Too scandal with, you know, in Hollywood, you know, with all the rapists and creeps there, you know, the what isn't talked about as much are all the hundreds of passive men who let it happen and who failed to say something because they were too concerned for their careers and their, you know, the money they wanted to make. And you know, for every one rapist in that picture, there was 100 men that said nothing. You know, it was passivity.
Yeah. Mm. Good job, Sam. Way to bring up that whole issue. Yeah.
The wheel of topics.
Was that the one that you were really trying to spin, like trying to get it to land on?
No, not really. I stopped spinning and I was looking through them. And that was the only one. I had, what else did I have? Are kids bad?
What? Want to explain that?
Are kids bad? Is Trump racist? Is this a communist revolution? How is marriage? Del Taco or Taco Bell?
Oh, that sounds like a good one to end on. Easiest question in the
world. All right,
world.
Let's hear it.
Taco Bell, man. Although they keep on removing things from their menu left and right.
Every day. I have to go every week now just to get the thing that's on their menu before it goes away.
I know.
It's terrible.
It's horrible. But it's still better than Del Taco.
And I am never able to win an Xbox every single time they do those giveaways on their cups.
Every time I'm like, maybe today.
You know what's, it'll be the day. Today's the day. I'll win an Xbox from like Taco Bell cup. You know what though? If I was some punk working at Taco Bell, like most of these high school punks are, we get our thing of cups in. Yep. I would sit there and I would take pictures of every single cup. And I get home from my shift and I would just go there. I would sit there and I would just enter them all.
I'm pretty sure that's happened to me before. I remember getting a cup and typing in the code and it came back and said, this code has already been used.
Oh, yes, it has. Dun, 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 dun.
Scandal. So, well, yes.
I've been talking about their dollar menu.
Now we have something to riot about.
Yeah, but then they got rid of their double stack tacos, which was the best
dollar menu one?
Yes.
Yeah. They got rid of that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got like five of those every time I went because it was a freaking dollar for a nacho crunch double stack taco. And it was, I mean, there hasn't been a good dollar deal like that since the Chalupa.
Well, before that, it was the loaded grillers. I used to get those a ton.
Loaded grillers.
Those are good.
I'm good with like the dollar beef burrito. That's
still good. That's not bad.
The beefy five layer is still a good go-to.
Guys, it's all the same ingredients. Bucks, it's all the same
crap.
But rearranged in different ways.
It really is. But I mean, like, it changes the experience depending on how it's rearranged.
I'm a sucker for it. I fall for it every time. They've got me. I don't care how obvious it is.
Yeah.
Keep going back, man.
It's just like the fake news. People keep going back to it because exactly. They want it to be true so much. They really want Trump to be a racist, so they just keep.
Oh my gosh, keep going back. Man.
That's right.
Anyone see any crappy kids movies lately?
Nope.
No.
No.
I mean, so far, my daughter's basically been limited to like random little kids shows on YouTube or Netflix or whatever.
Oh, I've got a good kids movie.
Okay.
Emily and I watched this the other week. We watched Emperor's New Groove for the first time in a while. And
oh,
I was
classic.
Which so is good. Such a great movie. And I was talking to Emily, I'm like, why doesn't Disney make good movie, like good original stories like this anymore? Like there's no,
instead of the live action remakes of all of their old
right.
classics.
Like they just made up the story in about, you know, with original music and original characters, and it was a hit, you know, and it's like lives on in all of our
Imagine
memories forever
that.
And ever. And I was thinking,
I think it's based off of the Nebuchadnezzar story.
That's what I told Emily. I said, you know what's such a good story is because it's such a good story is because this is a biblical story. Mm-hmm. It's based
Bible
off
for
of
the win.
Yeah, because Bible has the best stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. It is really sad. It is sad. What is like Disney used to be the most creative and record. Okay.
We right. were worried that you had
Disney
got canceled
like
by Disney.
Yeah,
they sniped
Disney
me.
Used
they
to be are. This, but now.
No, they used to be the most creative company in the world. And mm-hmm. what they lost their conviction in order to tell a good story, you have to have that basis in good and evil, Western
yes.
culture, morality, virtue, honor. And
Western culture.
They
toxic
have,
masculinity.
Yeah.
They have Western, thrown that out and they have nothing. There's nothing.
Because Emperor's New Groove
they have nothing
is,
to say.
Right. The Emperor is a spoiled brat and he's prideful and doesn't care about other people. And by the end of the story, he learns how to care about other people.
Exactly. It's a process.
It's a
like you, there's yeah. development.
You see
it's
the
not...
transformation of
exactly.
the Llama Emperor.
I mean, yeah. I mean, compare that to what we have now with like the live action remake of Mulan.
Did
which
you see
was
it?
No, did you?
No.
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 So we should
we're
going to
talk about it anyway, though. We're just going to
well,
sit here.
I,
and we're going to critique it. Oh my gosh.
I know enough to know that it was created in league with and the approval of the Chinese
China.
Government.
China. China.
Filmed partially in a city that was housing concentration camp prisoners, you know. It's like it's a complete like soulless corporate sellout now. Infused Yeah. It's just sad.
Sorry.
And I heard that they removed the love interest from the live action too.
Oh, sure.
Like she can't fall in love because that wouldn't
no,
be feminist.
That's,
that wouldn't
I think
be
it's,
feminist.
I think it's hilarious do. That they wanted to make it more accurate to history, but isn't Mulan a mythical character anyways?
More well, accurate to culture, maybe.
I don't know.
Because she didn't actually, like, I think she
well,
was,
it
like,
is mythical.
In,
like,
in
the
a
movie,
battle,
there's, like,
but
some
she didn't,
eagle
like,
woman who transforms
the world.
Into an eagle and all this stuff. So I don't think it's supposed to be, like,
we,
accurate.
We, the Babylon Bee did a treatment of it where the article was somewhere along the lines of, you know, like for international audiences, they re-edited the film to make Mulan like a really good cooker and cleaner for her husband. because that's what international audiences want. You know, those are the kind of values that they have in China and everywhere else in the world where this movie is being shown. You know,
it's like it's the same company that took Boyega out of the Star Wars promotional film overseas because
yeah.
he's black.
Yeah.
How incredible is that?
Insane.
Like they're going to lecture us about like cultural diversity, and then they edit their promotional videos.
Yeah. And they took
in China.
They took the gay purple Cyclops out of the movie Onward, and in the Middle East when they showed it in the Middle East.
That's
you know,
crazy.
Yeah, no conviction. You know, if you're going to be a right. if you're going to be a godless pagan, at least have some freaking conviction about it.
I know,
but they don't even
at least
have
admit
the courage
that you're a godless
stand,
pagan
to stand on the principles of their godless paganism. It's just disgusting. They're like no, they're not. They're like it's nothing anymore. Like there's
yeah,
nothing.
It's money.
Nothing.
Joel.
it's a value all about money. To say. Well, love of money is the root of all evil, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
like that's like you that. Get mm-hmm. you get mm-hmm. owned by the money, and there's nothing left for you to say that I want to hear at that point. You know,
it's true. Yeah.
One movie coming out that I am interested in from an analytical standpoint and a worldview standpoint, just by watching the trailer, is Ryan Reynolds' movie Free Guy, where he's like some video game character.
That looks pretty funny.
So they came out with a second trailer just a day or two ago. And it looks like, just based off the trailer, that the idea is they realize they're in a video game world. So there's no meaning, nothing, like they're not real.
He's an NPC.
But they find meaning in this meaningless world. So they know that like we're just video game characters, but they kind of make their own meaning.
So and it's I'm
like,
nihilism. It's a nihilist.
Right. Like, is that basically a reflection of the idea? Wow. Like our universe has no purpose, no meaning, but
yeah, we're trying to make meaning out of it.
Right. So like there's one scene in the trailer where these two guys are sitting down and have a heart to heart. And Ryan Reynolds says like, if we're not real, like, is all of this even worth it? And the guy says, like, hey, two guys sitting down, you know, helping each other and lifting each other up. If that's not real, I don't know what is. You know, it's the idea of, like,
yeah,
nothing is real, but this moment is real.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm just interested to see that from, like, a desperate, just a reflection of a world's desperate attempt to find meaning when their worldview doesn't allow for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the polar opposite of that was in Lord of the Rings when
it always goes back to Lord of the Rings.
It does. Well, because that's like the quintessential Western story. It's you know, you have Frodo who's about to give up, and Sam gives this kind of the speech about all the great stories, and he says the great stories, the ones that are worth telling, the ones that you remember, are the ones where they wanted to give up and they kept going. And
getting goosebumps.
And he said, and Frodo says, "What are we fighting for, Sam? What are we fighting There's for?"
Good
in a mind. Modern in a modern movie, in the Ryan Reynolds Free Guy movie, Sam would reply by saying, "We're fighting for each other. We're fighting for this family that we've made, this meaning that we found in each other, and the love that we have for each other." That's not what Sam says. Sam says, "We're fighting because there's good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for." The meaning that they found was completely outside of themselves. Mm-hmm. It was transcendent. It transcended their very lives. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've lost. That's what Disney has lost. That's what our culture has lost. And that's why we can't tell good stories anymore. So what are we doing, Christians? Come on. When are we going
to
make a movie?
Start our own...
we need to add that to our man-hug bingo, you know? The what? Idea of... Where's the good stories?
Where's the good right. stories? Because we talk about that every time, too. We're not making them, but I sure wish somebody else would.
We're such broken records, man.
I know. Every single time.
We have three or
movies
four
are
things.
Terrible. Disney's right. the worst. Our culture is degrading. Let's start a movie company and recapture stories.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey guys, we're just hitting our stride here, okay? We're gonna
Yeah, that's good.
We're just getting warm. We're reintroducing everyone back to the Barry Brothers.
We are.
Getting
by rehashing all of our
forgot
own
about what we're all about.
Right. You know what we're all about.
If you've never listened to any of our previous podcast episodes, this about covers all of them. So you don't need to go back and listen.
Hey, but you know what they say? The only way to get a message across is by just pounding it. And repeating it over and over and over again. So if we have themes that keep coming up and we keep on emphasizing and reinforcing them, then those are the ones that might even hook themselves into the ear of a listener.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. All right, brothers. I think that's a wrap.